Hello and welcome to Leadership Perspective, the official podcast of the Nordic Resistance Movement, in which Simon Lindberg, the movement's leader, voices the organization's positions and thoughts. This is our second episode. My name is Fredrik Weidland, and with me I have, of course, Simon Lindberg. Greetings.
Hello, hello. Thank you.
Yeah, and so this is, like I said, our second episode, and I think the first one went quite well, but I also believe it will get even better in the future. We're just warming up now. What do you say?
Yeah, we need to get a bit more flow on it. You and me, we are, of course, very used to each other and work very well together, since we have the Swedish podcast Ledarperspektiv, where we have recorded a lot of episodes. So I don't think that is something we need to work on. But still, there are some changes in this program compared to Ledarperspektiv. And also, of course, it is a little bit different to talk English instead of Swedish. It's not our native language. So yeah, I think it will get even better along the way as well.
Yeah, you lose the nuances in the language when you're not accustomed to do it all the time. So a little bit more practice.
Yeah, but I also think it will be very good. And I think we got quite good critique on the first episode, at least. So, yeah, but as said, it will get even better.
Yeah, very good. So every episode in our Swedish podcast, Ledarperspektiv, I have an introduction to the show. Some thoughts of what has been improving in the struggle, perhaps some anecdotes, stuff like that. So I will have it in this show as well before we get started.
Yes.
And it's not unusual that I speak about the media and radio in this segment, which are areas that I am highly involved with. And I would like to say that whether I'm part of this or not, the media is one of our strongest areas in the Nordic countries for our movement. And since we started Nordfront in 2012, we have been very, very good at media work. The first years with written articles and videos, and in recent years with also radio and TV shows. And Nordfront is the biggest pro-white alternative media in Sweden, and we are also, at the same time, the most extreme. And I think the same is true for our sites in Finland, Norway, and Denmark as well. So we have, at the moment, two studio TV studio programs, both local from the most northern and the most southern part of Sweden. And we have 13 radio shows, 3 in English. So, yeah, our work in media is really really good and also developing all the time. And I think when people think about Nordic resistance movement in the Nordic countries, they first of all think about street activism, but second of all, our work in media. So it's a big part of our struggle. But I think the Englishman, the American, the German don't see this as we do, because our radio shows, for example, are still mostly in the Nordic languages. So when we are now going into 2020, I will give a brief update on our plans for radio for you non-Nordic listeners. So we do have our weekly news podcast, Nordic Frontier, and we have a Leadership Perspective, which is a monthly podcast. And we also have our activism podcast, Nordic Voice, which is on ice at the moment. I have had some meetings there, and we will change around a little bit to make it work. But I can't say when it will be up there. I can't do that at the moment. But hopefully the first half of this year. Also, we have established in 2019 a project that we call Open Mic. And through this project, we let everyone, almost everyone at least, speak about interesting topics that they are experts on. You don't have to be a member of the Nordic Resistance Movement to do this. And the subject doesn't always need to be directly connected to our struggle. For example, our latest episode was about black metal and its roots. Before that, we invited an organization group that would hold a demonstration so that they could speak on our platform on the topic, repatriation. And also we have had an episode about the horror genre, actually. So that's also a bit dark, like black metal. So what I want to say about this is that this can also be done in English. So if you listeners from other countries, English-speaking countries, have any interesting topics that you want to talk about and you want to do it on our platform, then you can email us with your idea.
Are there any boundaries on what topic it could be, or could it be anything between heaven and earth?
Yes, of course, there are some boundaries. You cannot promote homosexuality or stuff like that. But you also don't have to be national socialist to do this, or be 100% sympathizer with the Nordic Resistance Movement. But you should be a nationalist. And the podcast, like I said, we had this black metal and horror genre. And, well, it was nationalist that broadcast it, but they just...
Yeah, it is nationalist, broadcasted it from a nationalistic viewpoint.
Yeah. Yeah, so we have, like I said, black metal and the horror genre, and doesn't have to be that sort of questions, that the dark topics in the podcast. But I think that show that the topics can be quite broad. So you can speak about almost everything that is interesting. Well, of course, we just don't let people broadcast on a platform, because we would like to have the idea sent to us, and then we can talk about it. Mm. So,
but it could be very broad. It could be very many topics, just as long as they are somewhat out of a nationalist viewpoint, you could say, or at least. Because I know I listened to the black metal episode, and that was quite ideological anyway, even though it was a small topic. And it is a topic that not necessarily has to do anything with politics. They still did it very well, where they talked about it out of a nationalistic viewpoint.
Yes, it was. They didn't just play black metal screaming music, but instead they... discuss the roots of black metal and the whole pagan versus Christianity, civilization versus chaos, that sort of philosophical questions. So, and like you said, from a nationalist worldview.
Yeah, and to just clarify things, this, since you haven't listened to the show, you who are listening to this, this doesn't mean that Nordic Resistance Movement takes a pro stance on black metal or anything, because as Vaidland said, this is a very open radio show that could carry out a lot of topics, and it's not directly bound to the Nordic Resistance Movement. It's more open, a bit autonomous, you could say, project for nationalists.
Yeah, and a lot of fun, not to be taken all that serious. So, yeah, but we have this project, and if you want to participate in some way, then you email us. And also, I would like to say, finally, I could almost promise that we'll have at least one more podcast in English this year, and that it will probably be about a bit more esoteric subjects. Yeah, so very good.
Yes, another thing that just crossed my mind when you were talking about Nordfont and everything that could be good to clarify. It's not directly on the topic you said, but I just thought about it. I think Nordfont is quite famous also internationally, even though Nordfont is in Swedish, and I don't think our international sympathizers read a lot of Nordfont. They still recognize Nordfont and knows about Nordfont. And just to clarify things, we are, of course, the Nordic Resistance Movement and not Nordfont. And Nordfont is just name at one of our sites. So we get some emails and so on about people wants to join Nordfront and so on. But Nordfront is not something that could be joined. It's the Nordic Resistance Movement that is the organization behind Nordfront. So just a simple clarification about that.
For a few years ago, we have that problem also in Sweden, because the media here always called us Nordfront and not the Nordic Resistance Movement.
I also think because there are the international, because there are a lot of pictures on us in media where we stand with the shields, for example, and on the shields that says Nordfront. So therefore, I think, but I mean, the shields are just commercial banners for the webpage Nordfront. The organization is, as I said, Nordic Resistance Movement. So,
yeah. Okay. So a little bit about media, but now we're going to move on to the real business. So we are going to talk about what has happened in the struggle since last time. And with the new year and all, I think we will take a look at the whole year of struggle 2018. We have published our or your yearly report on NordicResistanceMovement.org. But to summarize and perhaps go a little bit more into detail, what did the Nordic Resistance Movement do and accomplish in 2019?
Yeah, that is actually a rather big question. And it is something we, of course, could talk for hours about. A year is a long time. And in such an active organization as ours, there happens quite a lot during a year. In the article, I wrote that we have conducted around 2,500 activities in Sweden. But since we are active in all Nordic countries, the total amount of activities conducted by the organization is even higher than that. I don't have any detailed numbers on that, but I would say that somewhere between 3,000 to 4,000 activities has been conducted in all Nordic countries combined during 2019. So if we were to talk about everything we would have done, it would have been an insanely long radio show.
And I will also say that this was a slow year, deliberately a slow year, because we wanted to work with internal matters like lecturing and stuff like that. So, like you said, only Sweden, 2,500, you said, or?
Yes, yes.
For a slow year.
Yeah,
That's a lot of activity.
Exactly, exactly. And 2,500 is still very much, and 3,000 to 4,000 in all Nordic countries. But I will try to focus on the biggest and most important things, and I will just mention it very briefly. So I think the activity that I mentioned in the yearly article that was the most successful one during the year, or the most memorable, was the May Day. On May Day, we have a tradition to demonstrate for workers' rights, since we are the only true workers' party that acts for Nordic workers. So in 2019, we held two demonstrations in two different cities at the same time. We were in both Ludvika and Kungälv. And in both of these cities, we marched under the parole "Workers Against Globalism for a Nordic Nation." And the demonstrations, they were very good. They went fine. They had hundreds of participants. However, the demonstration in Kungälv was surrounded by the worst police work I have ever seen. And trust me when I say I have seen a lot of bad police work during the years as an active National Socialist. But this took the prize. This was the worst. Red counter-protesters, they were allowed to attack our ranks with rocks, bottles, sticks, firecrackers, and so on. And of course, we fought back against the Reds. But every time we did so, the police attacked us with mace and batons. However, more Reds and cops got injured than National Socialists, I would say. So it, even though the situation was like it was, it worked out quite fine anyway. Also worthy of mention during this demonstration is that very, very many ordinary people were at the places to listen to us, to see us, that didn't walk into the demonstrations, but they were still very curious and wanted to hear what we had to say. And over 30,000 people watched our live streams the very same day. Of course, a lot more have seen it afterwards, but just the same day, 30,000 people watched it. And that is despite that we are being heavily censored by YouTube and other video services. So it would have been even more if we were allowed to use these platforms as everyone else. So those demonstrations got us a lot of new sympathizers and a lot of people got to know about us and so on. So they were very successful.
Yeah, I know that for a fact because I live in the city that we hold our demonstration on in Kungälv, and I know people have come to me after the demonstration saying that we were acting very good at the demonstration because they wanted to do that like Charlottesville. And in the end, the Reds and the police actually stood shoulder by shoulder, and the policing hitting us with batons and the Reds kicking shoulders by shoulders. And like you said, we fought back, but we did that in a disciplined matter. So that it didn't go into a shitstorm like they wanted it to be. So people recognize that.
Yes.
And they also recognize that the police acting like cowards towards the Reds.
Yeah. And this is, of course, very successful as well. It's a very successful way of showing both that we are a strong force to be reckoned with and also that the system do not stand up for freedom of speech and so on. But they have a political agenda just wanting to stop us.
Yeah.
So then if we continue, also during the year, we held another demonstration that was very successful, and that was in Copenhagen, the capital of Denmark. It was not an announced demonstration, as it was at May Day. It was a spontaneous demonstration where we just showed up in the city center, started to march and went into the central parts of the city and gave a speech there. And it was really good since it was an historical event because it was the biggest nationalist activity in Copenhagen since the Second World War. So it was a quite big thing. During the year, we also attended a demonstration in central Helsinki in Finland on Finland's Independence Day. Also, that demonstration was very successful. We were not allowed to arrange the demonstration ourselves since we are banned by the state of Finland. So, of course, we only participated as nice visitors. We, of course, had nothing at all to do with the arrangements or anything else like that.
No.
So, no. But that was also a very good demonstration. And if we look forward to other public street activities that weren't just demonstrations, we held around 200 public activities, I think, around the Nordic countries during the years, where we took a city square and stood there for a couple of hours outside shopping malls or at city centers, stand up with our flags, with our banners, and distributed flyers to the people. And I know we talked a lot about this in the first episode of Leadership Perspective, that this kind of activities is what really stands out with the Nordic Resistance Movement. Now you mentioned media as well here today, but these public activities, we are really good at these. And 200 of these were conducted during 2019. In Sweden alone, we held around 3 of these activities somewhere in the country each week. So that's quite intense activity. So a lot of public activities. And with public activities, also very worth of mention is that we held our first public activities ever on Iceland. We held a public activity in the central parts of Reykjavik, the capital of Iceland. And also during the year, there was a couple of other public activities in other cities. And in Iceland, we actually had almost a whole week of comradeship where there were participators from all Nordic countries. And this was a really good and successful week, except for distributing flyers, putting up stickers and so on. We went sightseeing, we went climbing in hills, we held physical exercise, had lectures, and took a bath in natural hot springs and so on. It was a very, very nice week and gave a boost to the comrades in Iceland. So they have been able to fight on hard since then and recruited a lot of new members and so on.
Yeah, I think one thing that wasn't mentioned in the article is that the Icelanders after that have conducted their own public activism.
Yeah, exactly. Without the help from the others of us. So yes, absolutely.
That's very good.
Mm. And I mentioned here that we held nature activities and lectures on Iceland and physical training. And that is, of course, something that has been conducted regularly all over the Nordic countries during the whole year. Every week there are several martial art trainings and nature activities and lectures. It is actually the year where we have held most lectures and physical trainings ever in Nordic Resistance Movement history. So that is also something we have worked very hard on, building up the internal infrastructure and strengthening our own members.
Yeah.
And if we continue during 2019, we also launched a lot of new things. For the listeners of this podcast, I believe the most interesting things that we launched were this podcast, Leadership Perspective, but also, and even more, of course, our English webpage, nordicresistancemovement.org. But except for these things, we also launched some other podcasts, a new TV show, new musical artist, and a completely new radio site, just to name a few things that were launched. Also worth of mention is that the Finnish National Socialist Organization, Kotivapauta, that we in the Nordic Resistance Movement is very fond of, they were also launched and held a really active year in 2019. And as always, we also did quite some spectacular activities during the year. We held counter demonstrations against the gay lobby and against an anti-racist Torchlit march. We raised our flag on a famous castle in Kungälv. We had activists with visible flags at the goal line of the famous Swedish ski event Vasaloppet, so that our flags also got in the live reports in national TV broadcasting. We have acted against a porno exhibition in Denmark and also had an activity in Denmark where we drove with a car at the beaches, waving our flag and handing out flyers to people. We have cleaned up in nature and distributed the trash to infamous race traitors. And there also have been some activities where dolls portrayed as race traitors or pedophiles has been hanged up with a noose around their neck to warn scum like this that we are watching them. And of course, the system have worked heavily against us also this year. The system's repression against us is always an evidence of our that we are moving forward. And we have seen a lot of evidence on this from the system also this year. For example, World Jewish Congress that has their seat in America, they have spread lies about us with propaganda videos and have actively fought against us quite hard. We have the Democrats in the American Congress that spoke out that they think that the Nordic resistance movement should be classified as terrorists. We have the government in Sweden that have tried to make our symbol illegal. And also, we have during the year attended some really spectacular trials where we stood charged for different things. The most famous one of these trials was a 7-day trial in Gothenburg where the attorney tried to make it illegal and convict some guys for just taking part in our demonstrations. They meant that it should be classified as hate speech just to attend our rally, even though we are a legal organization. However, we won this one, but we lost other cases during the year. Our former responsible for publishing on Nordfront got sentenced to prison for spread of violent material because of that we posted Brenton Tarrant's video on our site. And Comrades in Norway has for the first time ever been convicted for spreading hatred for putting up swastika banners in Norway. So there has happened some things from the system as well. And this is, of course, just a little bit of it, but the most famous things, I would say. But as said, between 3,000 or 4,000 activities in all Nordic countries, I have missed out extremely much. To read some more about it, you can look into the article. Also in the article, a lot of video footage is being implemented. So you can, if you have missed out our videos during the year, you can watch them in that article. But with that being said, I think I will settle there to answer the question. But to summarize, I could say that it has been a really, really active year as always. And we have been continuously pushing ourselves forward.
Yeah, I think maybe some of the listeners think that it's quite strange from us to put up swastika flags, because we have our own flag. And in Norway, they did that because it was the date when the Germans went into Norway. And if you know history, then you know that the British had plans to occupy Norway. So the Germans went in first, actually. So I think that was a kind of a provocative protest.
Yes, absolutely.
More than that we put up swastika flags every week and stuff like that.
Exactly. No, and I guess we will talk a little bit more about swastikas and things during the ideological question, at least. But it's good that you clarify that anyway.
Yeah, and it's nothing wrong with the swastika, but we'll get into that later, yes.
Yes.
And then we start the other segment, the ideological tactical question. So we will talk about National Socialism. And the Nordic Resistance Movement wholeheartedly confessed to National Socialism. However, we often call our ideology for Nordic National Socialism for the 21st century. And it's certainly not obvious to everyone what this means. So I thought that we should briefly and concisely try to outline here what National Socialism is and what it really means when we say we are National Socialist. So if you start by answering the question reasonably briefly and concisely. What is National Socialism?
Yes, National Socialism in short is what is best for our people and for our people as a whole, and being considered with a long-term mindset. It is what is best for our people's survival, freedom, and development. And a very important thing when I am talking about our people is that I am talking about biology and genes. I'm talking about race, not culture, not language. Culture and language develops from race. The opposite can never happen. So the first political principle of National Socialism is therefore that the nation must be ethnically homogeneous in order to stay independent and secure. And another important word when it comes to National Socialism is Volksgemeinschaft, unity among the people for the common good, for the best interest of the nation as a whole. Instead of infighting, as it is with Marxism and capitalism, National Socialism unites the people into one. Blue-collar workers stand together with white-collar workers, the employed together with the employees, men together with women, and young together with old. Instead of thinking about and acting on a basis of what is best for you personally or for your specific interest group in society, you work for the race and nation as a whole, making it as prosperous as possible. We do not say that everyone is equal, as in Marxism. Instead, we go for the opposite and admit that every individual is unique and that also different groups within society actually differs from each other. But we embrace these differences and see them as crucial for becoming complete. Men are worthless without women, as blue-collar workers are worthless without white-collar workers, and of course, the other way around. The third and lastly extremely important core value when it comes to define National Socialism is nature. National Socialism is nature's law adopted to the modern Aryan man. We wish to keep the order in the world in which things has been created naturally. As an example, nature wouldn't have created different human races if it was meant that they should all be mixed together into one. With this, hand in hand, there also comes a great amount of respect for the nature, for animals and the environment. We believe that we as a stronger species must take care of nature and its creations. So I would say that these three, race, Volksgemeinschaft and nature, they are the three most important core values of National Socialism and are the three best short answers what National Socialism is.
Yeah. Can I go some off topic?
Yeah.
or maybe it isn't off topic because I think it's aligned with the nature part. I think one thing which is very National Socialistic is the view on life or the attitude to life as a whole, and which is explained by authors like Anton Holzner, Kurt Eggers, and also Hitler himself. And Anton Holzner wrote some scriptures which we have translated to Swedish, were great ones, concerning the ability of master life. So when you face adversity or even suffering, you should regard that as a test and welcome it. Mm-hmm. And I think it, in that case, there are some Nietzsche also in National Socialism. What doesn't kill you makes you stronger. So,
absolutely.
Yes. So perhaps in the nature part then.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but so the Nordic Resistance Movement are Nazis?
Yeah, it's not as an easy question as it sounds, because the answer could be said to be both yes and no, and that depends, of course, on what you put into the term Nazi. We never portray ourselves as Nazis, and we do not like, for example, when the paper writes about us that we are Nazis. However, at the same time, we are openly and proud National Socialists. So, I mean, the word Nazi, it is a slander word for National Socialist invented by a Jew who was against the National Socialist in Germany in the 1920s. So, of course, if you look at the word Nazi as a shortening of National Socialist, then we, of course, are Nazis. But the term Nazi, I would say it gets another meaning. it's not just a short of National Socialist. It gets the same meaning towards a National Socialist as if you call a communist for like Kommunistgamm or something similar to that.
Yeah.
So, of course, we are as happy about being described as Nazis as communists are about being described as Kommunistgamm. We want people to call us what we are and not use slanders. And we are National Socialists, nothing else, not Nazis. But even worse is that the word Nazi has been filled up with so much propaganda that today the word has evolved into something else, something even worse than when it was invented in the 1920s. The meaning of a Nazi today is practically that you're a really evil psychopath that feeds on hate and Jewish babies. And this description is kind of the opposite of a National Socialist. We are not scum, we are not psychos, we are not evil. We are proud, loving Nordic men and women who fights for a better, brighter and whiter tomorrow. In other words, we are National Socialists.
Yeah. And I think maybe that Jew, who was also a communist Jew, used the word not just to portray some idiots, because it's a slang for a village idiot, I think. But also perhaps to hide that we are actually a social movement. And I think when they use Nazi today, that's perhaps their main purpose, to hide that we're a social movement. So I would like to discuss that also, because many people draw similarities between red communist socialism and National Socialism. Are there any such similarities, and what are the differences?
Yeah, there are a few lesser similarities and some, I would say, really big differences. And I would start out with the most important differences. And I briefly mentioned it already when I answered what National Socialism is. But Red Socialism proclaims that everyone, despite race and sex, is born equal. And that it is just the social environment that makes us who we are. That, for example, intelligence, but also other traits, as well as personality, orange to 100% after if you are rich or poor and how you are raised. And this is, of course, insanity. Of course, these things affect you. But the most important parts of who you are lies within your blood, your DNA. We National Socialists, we believe in natural order. Men and women are different from each other. Races are different from each other. And we praise these differences instead of trying to manipulate nature and erase these differences. Instead of lowering all to the same lowest standard, we acknowledge the differences, admitting that there are those who are stronger and those who are weaker in different areas. And to also keep these differences intact as they were created by nature. We also want to have closed borders and ethnically homogeneous states, which definitely differ us from the commies that want wide open borders and one mongrel human race. Other huge differences related to this is our view on the collective and on the state. Because both Red Socialists and National Socialists believe in a strong collective. However, the Reds believe in strengthening the collective by making it equal, by lower everyone to the same level, pushing down the strong, that no one should be allowed to be stronger or better than anyone else. We, on the opposite, we believe in and hail strong individuals, and we understand that driven individuals is really important to create a strong collective. As one example, we allow that some people could be richer than others. However, at the same time, we believe in lowering the differences between the poorest and richest, No one should bathe in money as others starve. But we do not believe that everything should be owned and controlled by the state and divided equally. And we especially do not believe in communism as it has turned out in reality, where it has been put into practice, that it should be a poor people led by an insanely wealthy and corrupt elite. More about the differences on state then. Communism's utopia is anarchy. There should be no state and no laws. And the strong dictatorship that we have seen in communist state is explained as there has never been a true communist state. There has only been states on the way to get towards communism. But we National Socialists, we believe in a strong and authoritarian state also in our utopian version. Strong men that takes responsibility and that are altruistic and who acts for the well-being of the nation, the people. However, we are not for dictatorship, because we also believe in a free people that has the right to vote on things important to them in their everyday life. We also believe in the truly democratic right for the people to stand armed. An armed people has the possibility to revolt against a corrupt regime, and only weak governments fear that their people have guns. So our state is a leader state, but with a good portion of democracy and freedom for the people. So there are some differences. What do we have in common with red socialism? I would say mainly three things. Common will for common good, that we believe in standing up for a greater cause, and that we are a revolutionary movement. We do agree on that important social services like hospitals, schools, public transport, road construction, and so on must be owned by the people and work for the people, not for maximal profit. To get a good education, to get good healthcare, that should not be a privilege only for the few rich, but for the whole people, no matter its income. However, we differ from the Reds, since we also believe in private enterprises and do not believe that everything should be owned and supervised by the state. Only the areas that could be seen as common service. And we share the view on fighting egocentrism, that you should look out for the bigger cause instead of your ego, that the nation as a whole will always be more important than you yourself. However, we differ here, since our nation is within our own borders and within our own people. We do not believe in some international bonds as the Reds do. And we as well are a revolutionary movement. We are not conservatives that want to turn back time. We are not moderates that wants to change some small things, but otherwise keep it as it is. We are revolutionaries, since we want to build something completely new on the ashes of today's society. And since we do not compromise, we want all or nothing. So, yeah, I hope I've clarified at least some similarities, but more importantly, some differences. There are huge differences between Red Socialism and National Socialism. And the most important of this is, of course, the view on race and blood, and that is what define you as a human being in a very high extension. Maybe I forgot something, but I think I have briefly talked about the most important parts. And maybe, because I know we did so in Swedish at least, maybe we will have a full episode on this topic in the future.
Yeah, and if you think that we forget to address some things, or I want us to be more specific, then write in the comments on Spreaker. Mm. Yeah, so, but with all this said, we usually are being described as right-wing extremists. But according to the classical right-wing scale, it now seems that you want to go more to left. where would you place National Socialism?
I would say that National Socialism stand above the left-right-wing scale. We have things in our ideology that could be considered left-wing and other beliefs that could be seen as right-wing. But as a whole, National Socialism is not the one or the other. We are something else, something more. We represent a complete worldview that could replace the left-wing and the right-wing. A third position, if you would like to say so. And about extremism, since you also mentioned that, are we extremists? And to answer that question, I would like to say that if it is extreme to secure the survival of your race, if it is extreme to denounce both capitalism and Marxism, if it is extreme to go to the opposite of what the globalists want, if it is extreme to do whatever it takes to achieve all of this, then yes, in that case, we are very, very, very extreme. However, at the same time, I would like to say that I believe it is much more extreme to want your own people to be replaced. So if you look into that, we are definitely not extremists. We stand above the left-right-wing scale, and if we are extremists or not, I guess that depends on who you ask.
Yeah. Some may argue that the main issue of National Socialism is anti-Semitism and hatred towards the Jews. Do you have any comment on that?
There is actually nothing in National Socialism itself, in its core, that says that it must be anti-Semitic by definition. But, and there is a very big but, the Jews, they have been totally open for thousands of years that they want to exterminate our race, that we whites stand in their way of world domination. They have also fought active to realize this goal for as long, with all different methods they can find out. And since National Socialism is about what is best for the survival, freedom, and development of our own people, and Jewish powers wants to eradicate us from the face of Earth, naturally we also must fight back these Jewish powers. And actually, this means that the answer to the question could be yes, that National Socialism is anti-Semitic, but strictly out of the reasons associated with racial self-defense. Since they attack us, we fight back, and we will fight them back as much as it is necessary to be able to secure our racial survival and freedom, and that for thousands of years to come.
So it's not like some say that we create the Jews because we want that opponent.
No, definitely not. It's they who have made us their opponent by opposing our people and acting subversive against our people in very many different ways through thousands of years.
Yeah, and like you said, they are quite openly about it, because in their own sacred text, they say that they will exterminate us, that is the goal from their Jewish God.
Yeah, and that we stand in the way of their world domination. They first must destroy us.
Yeah. Yes, but what about other races then? And, well, Lebensraum. Is National Socialism imperialistic?
No, we're not imperialistic. We acknowledge that we must set the whole North free and that we must have the whole North unite into one nation. And that is to be able to create a self-sufficient and strong state. It wouldn't be enough with just Sweden or Finland or Norway. But apart from that, we believe in cooperation with other nations that have freed themselves from the shackles of Marxism and capitalism. We do not hate other races. We simply do not want our race to be mixed into annihilation. And that is something truly different from each other, to hate other people and just don't want to racially mix with them. Because we want to honor nature and the way nature has brought us, and we think that our race deserves to survive as well. So we could cooperate with all people in all nations on Earth that do respect our sovereignty. We could stand segregated, but still together to make the world as a whole a better place that would benefit all of us. And we could also help other nations and races out if we believe that it would also be in our race's best interest to do so. Otherwise, we believe that every race has a responsibility for themselves to secure their own destiny. So, also, if we look back in time with Adolf Hitler and the National Socialists in Germany, I wouldn't say they were imperialistic either. They wanted their old Germany back, their greater Germany. But the war made one thing led to another. And just as you said before about Norway, during war times, you must look at things differently. Then you must occupy important land masses to be able to conduct the war and not lose the war. So Adolf Hitler's goal was not world domination, but the war made him get into other countries than the original plan, or what the plan would have been in peacetime.
Yeah, the Lebensraum was more like a geopolitical solution.
Of course, it was Lebensraum in the case of taking back the old Großdeutschland, just as we would like to unite the North into one nation.
Yeah, and then they went into the East, but like you said, it was war, so.
Yeah.
But if we talk some more about the Third Reich, then how important is Adolf Hitler to National Socialism? Should you really put up swastikas and Hitler in people's faces?
We do believe in being radical and being uncompromisingly. We believe that it is the masses that should adapt to us and not the other way around. However, of course, there still are limits and a balance must be obtained. We do not believe in pushing Third Reich swastikas and Adolf Hitlers into people's faces, as you say, because almost a century has passed since then. And also to mention, we are in the Nordic countries, not in Germany. And even though we share the same core ideals, we are not a copy of NSDAP, and we do not share their views on everything in detail. And we are not LARPers, and we are not reactionaries. We have adopted National Socialism to the 21st century and to the Nordic man. So we have found Nordic National Socialism. However, at the same time, it is important to say that we never shy from the Third Reich. We do not try to hide that important part of history away. It still remains as a crucial part in the history of the white man's fight. And especially, it is an important part of the National Socialist history. Adolf Hitler was a great man that did many fantastic things for Germany and the German people. The things that National Socialists accomplished in Germany, and especially before the outbreak of the Second World War, are truly astonishing and also serves as a great practical example of what miracles National Socialism could accomplish. And therefore, we must point this out. But just to avoid the sick hate crime laws in Sweden, however, I must be very clear on the fact that I do not believe in the Holocaust. And therefore, I do not encourage or try to celebrate any genocide or any acts of hatred against other people, religions, or sexual minorities. I'm talking about what Hitler did with the German economy, what progress they made in research and infrastructure, its revolutionary environment protection laws and rights for the workers, and so on. But I think there are important things to raise and lift up from the German Third Reich that stands as good examples also for us today. But at the same time, really be clear mentioning that we have adopted National Socialism into our period of time and towards our people's culture. We have created Nordic National Socialism. We have our own symbol, we have our own politics, but as said, we do not shy from history.
But isn't it more tactical to call yourself something other than National Socialist, because that word today is so defined?
No, definitely not, I would say, because National Socialism contains so much more than just politics. It also contains Aryan morale and spiritual beliefs, philosophical questions that you mentioned before. National Socialism is a complete worldview, and it is so much more than just an ism among others. There is so much that could risk to get lost if we call ourselves just nationalists or national democrats or even fascists or whatever instead. So being clearly outspoken National Socialists also actually protects us from getting liberalized, since it means we always must stay true to the core values. Otherwise, we wouldn't be National Socialists anymore. It also protects our movement from getting weakened from inside, since only people with a certain mindset and understanding will join us. Cucks that believe that it is stupid and not tactical that we call ourselves National Socialists, they will stay away. In National Socialism, we have our radical and revolutionary waypoints perfectly clear. It is all or nothing. National Socialism or annihilation, victory or death. And I definitely believe that the white race will perish from the face of Earth unless we are being able to get our people to adopt National Socialism. And I will continue fight for National Socialism no matter what changes in society and in politics will take place without us in the future. The cause is bigger than just some small questions. It's National Socialism or nothing.
Great. Yeah, okay. So now we have talked a little bit about National Socialism, and we surely will come back to that issue in later episodes. And also we have our own political program, Our Path, which we can link in the show here. So there you can read more about our views on political and ideological questions and Nordic National Socialism.
Yes.
So, but I think it will be enough for this time. So, questions and suggestions on topics for future episodes of Leadership Perspective can be sent to info@nordicresistancemovement.org. We do also appreciate both negative and positive feedback. Please spread this episode on social medias and help the Nordic Resistance Movement in any way you can. And you can also read more on nordicresistancemovement.org. Next episode will come out the 12th of February 2020. Thank you for this time. Bye.
Thank you, everyone. Take care. Bye.